Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
One of the main reasons we ought to re-elect President Obama is that he is still committed to constructive cooperation.
I tell you, Rodney will destroy this country if he became governor, president of the United States. No, I think he will destroy this country completely. Rodney will destroy this country. I don't believe him. If I see him, I would like to kill him.
Beyond the sea, somewhere.
Well, it's very clear to anyone with a brain that the Democrat Party of today now represents the God-hating, Israel-hating, America-hating, success-hating mobs. Welcome to the Savage Nation. As I said to you yesterday, the Democrats' rejection of God, I believe, was the turning point for America. And if you don't see the choice that you have before you, well, then it's going to be too late to do anything about it after the fact. So welcome to the Savage Nation. If you care to comment on any of the insanity that we've been watching, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. You know, the bigger picture is this. Here we are, as a nation, watching a class of people known as politicians lying to the public in order to get their votes. We have to ask ourselves, is this how intelligent people should be spending their days, watching and listening to professional liars? After all, these are not people who have developed new techniques for giving sight to the blind or giving hearing to the deaf or making the crippled walk. These are not people who put men on the moon. These are not people who fight in combat. These are liars. They're professional paid liars whose only job is to get reelected so they can continue to sack the treasury. They will do anything to do so. Again, what nation on earth would think that paying so much attention to such a low class of individuals is worthy of their evolutionary development? I don't. You mean, when you think about what I'm saying to you significantly, who are these people? One paid liar after another. Almost not one of them that you saw speak yesterday has done anything of any value for humanity, except get elected and rob the treasury and disperse it to their cronies. Think about that. Think about that. We're not looking at Jonas Salk. We're not looking at Albert Einstein. We're not looking at people who have done something for humanity. We're looking at people who have done nothing for humanity. It's very clear to me, looking at the audience for Obama, I was stunned, actually, at the mistake they made by packing it with Reverend Wright's church. It looked, the DNC really is a reflection of Reverend Wright's congregation. God haters, Israel haters, America haters, success haters. One after the other. One of them even wants to kill Mitt Romney. She said so. She said so. She's a delegate from Puerto Rico. Very passionate woman. Of course, the Secret Service, well, it says it's looking into it. You know, of course, because she's not a white returning military veteran who said something like that about someone else, she'll probably be dismissed as simply a passionate woman who said something she didn't really mean, and it'll be swept under the rug. But the bigger picture is the Democrats' rejection of God, in my opinion, should be the turning point. That was yesterday's show. You heard what happened. Everyone knows what happened. It's a big story. The dismissal of God with the removal and forced return of his name to its platform by party officials amid loud boos from the Reverend Wright delegates could be the turning point of the 2012 presidential campaign, said talk radio host Michael Savage. This is a big moment, Savage told his audience. America is disgusted with this party of atheists and America haters. Well, if you don't know the story, you really ought to get to know it, because you're certainly not going to get it from guys like what's his name, who took an Ambien before going on television, had a little collapse that had sent him to the hospital. Tom Brokaw inadvertently took an Ambien for a morning interview. I've told you most of the reporters are on drugs. He mixed up his prescriptions, apparently. He meant to take an upper when he took a downer. He thought it was night when it was day. Just as he thinks truth is lies, and lies are truth, and north is south, and south is north, and east is west, and west is east, and right is wrong, and wrong is right, and criminals are better than cops, he doesn't know what he's talking about. But his name is Tom Brokaw, and he wears big earphones. Everybody with big earphones must be very smart. Any woman with big earphones under blonde hair must be very intelligent. They're so excited over nothing. They're excited over nothing, much ado about nothing, hot air, just politicians lying to get elected. And so you have the choice. You probably have made up your mind who you're voting for anyway. I don't think anybody's going to, you know, change their mind at this point. But how any Democrat could ever vote, let's say any Democrat who's God-fearing could ever vote for this party again is beyond me. How any Jew could ever vote for a Democrat is not beyond me, because I understand that many Jewish people learn nothing from the Holocaust. Nothing. Nothing. And here's a party of Israel haters, which really is a mask for Jew haters. And by the way, I'm repeating what Martin Luther King Jr. said. You know, it's been forgotten, but I've pointed out to you for many years that it was Martin Luther King Jr. himself who said, make no mistake about it, anyone who says they're anti-Zionist is really anti-Semitic. Martin Luther King Jr. said that. That was hushed up, brushed up, pushed away, hidden, erased, gone, but he said it because he knew what it really was. You know, looking at that crowd, that they hate Jews. You know it. And you know that the only Jew, you know that. And I know you're embarrassed by hearing this, and I know you're very uncomfortable hearing it, but I don't really care at this point in my life. I think too much is at stake. This guy is a naked Marxist. I don't care whether Tom Brokaw confirms that he's a Marxist. Do I need Tom Brokaw to get up there and say that the president is the first Marxist president we had? No, Tom Brokaw needs me to tell him what's going on, since he never knew what was going on. He always was a good-looking paid stooge with a loud voice. Okay? And I'm telling you, by Obama's associates, by his policies, by his history, by his education, he's our first communist president. Now you say, oh, come on, that's not true. Well, it is true. But the thing is you don't understand it, because you don't understand how communism today works. Modern communism, we're not talking about Bolshevism of 1917. We're talking about Fabian socialism, if you want to put it in a literary, intellectual phraseology that might be palatable to you. If you're on a Jeroboam of Bordeaux, maybe you can tolerate a right winger like Michael Savage, with 28 published books to his name, with 6 New York Times bestsellers in a row, including a novel that hit number 3 on the New York Times list without your help. That's right, 6 in a row. Do you know any other writer in America who's had 6 New York Times bestsellers in a row? I did. And the reason I'm telling it to you is so you get off your high horse and you start understanding there's a bigger world than you and your friends. And I'm telling you something. I don't need Tom Brokaw or anybody in the media to tell me what's going on. They need me to tell them what's going on, because I more clearly see what's going on than anybody in the United States of America. We have our first Marxist president, Barack Obama. 20 years he sat in a communist America-hating church, Reverend Wright. Every day, haters. You're telling me it didn't go in? He's like a sponge, him and Michelle. Then all of a sudden, they give him a whole new image. And with a little help from his brainwashed friends in the media, suddenly we're supposed to believe that he dropped all of his past. He didn't drop his past. He's just going as... He went as quickly as he could in the first 2.5 years. Then he backed off when he knew an election was coming. And suddenly you saw a new Obama for about 3-6 months. He was Mr. A Compromise, but he really didn't compromise, did he? He did some other horrible, dastardly things to this country. He has decimated NASA. He has destroyed the military. I'll go down the list if you want. Or if you'd rather I not say it to you because you're pained right now, go read Trickle Down Tyranny or Trickle Up Poverty. I'm sure you could find it in your bookstore. I love people to say, oh, Michael Savage, I don't listen to him. I said, what, you don't read either? But you don't go to bookstores? What do you do, dummy? You got your head in the sand? You think you know everything? Because you listen to Thomas Friedman of that moron of the New York Times? That Walking Dead? Or that schmuck on television who tells you what they write from? The man 10 times more clever, John Stewart? The man doesn't know what he's talking about. He's just another a quizzling of his children into an oven to stay alive another day. I have contempt for those people. And I will express my contempt for those people. Thank you very much. No, you're listening to somebody who knows what's going on. And I'm telling you, you have a clear choice. And if you elect this shyster again, Obama, what has gone on under Chavez is what's going to go on in this country. You ask anyone from the middle class who fled after Chavez seized power. With help from American liberals, by the way, who rigged the election for him, and I can name them. With help from brain-dead, drug-addicted actors like Sean Penn, who went down there and said he's a good man. A good man, huh? A good man. Well, why doesn't he go live there if he's such a good man? You have to ask yourself why so many people who have made such great fortunes in this country and have such vast audiences still hate the country. I don't hate the country. I love the country. Why does Sean Penn hate America? Why does John Stewart hate America? Why does Bill Maher hate America? Why does he hate God? Why does he hate people who respect God? Have you been in a country that doesn't respect God? Have you seen what those countries are like? Have you seen those nations? Men like them wouldn't last 1 second. They wouldn't be alive for 1 second in countries where there is no law of Abraham, no laws of Abraham. They wouldn't last 1 second in a land without the word of God. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm going to lighten it up now since too many Democrats have had a reach for Prozac. They've called DHS, military intelligence, CIA. They don't know what's wrong. Somebody's speaking the truth in America, and it must be illegal. Surely it's illegal to tell people what's going on. It can't be allowed. So I'm playing something light to lighten them up on the Savage Nation. I also am playing this song because when Carrie speaks later on, I think via satellite, we're going to all sing along with this song. We're going to change the lyrics from Shrimp Boats Are Coming. We're going to all sing along, and we're going to sing, Swift boats are a-coming, their sails are in sight. Swift boats are a-coming. Yep, that's what we're going to do in the next hour. Just got an email from my good friend from Florida, Joyce Kaufman of WFTL. She says, Savage, God is using you and me. Sometimes your brilliance coupled with your spirituality is breathtaking. Thanks for being you. It helps me be me. And then she says, I just spent the weekend in San Francisco. It amazes me that you can live there. It's like living in the middle of the DNC. And it is. I noted that myself today. I walked around San Francisco with my dog, Teddy. And I noticed something. You know, I'm an observer of human nature, as all of us are. Anyone who's alive is observing everyone, no matter what they say. In other words, we're very judgmental. See, liberals say don't be judgmental, but they're judging you and your judgmentalism, aren't they? So we're all very judgmental. It's how we survive for 1 second on the earth. Unless we're judgmental, we're nothing. We're amoeba. So don't fall for that trick. Oh, don't be judgmental. They're judging you, saying you're judgmental, right? So that's judgmentalism. Therefore, they're just trying to trick you in a logical trap. So I'm extremely judgmental. I'm an old type of guy, you know what I'm saying? I judge everything. I look at everything. That's why I was a good biologist and a good botanist, because I observe things. See, observation is judgmentalism. Self-analysis is judgmentalism. Deciding what to eat or what not to eat is judgmentalism. Without judgment, you know what you are? A Democrat. That's what you are. So I walk around the streets of San Francisco, and I see people all trying to be crazier than they already are. They dress crazier than they already might. They dress in rags. And probably the most poorly dressed people in America are in a major city or in San Francisco. The mores of this city are such that if you come here as a half-wit, within 3 months, you become a quarter wit. What you do is you make yourself look uglier and you act stupider than you already are. So you jaywalk in front of a car. You spill coffee on yourself. You talk to yourself in the street like you have a phone in your head. Everybody tries to outdo themselves with idiocy because the society has made some decision somewhere, at least amongst this class of losers, that success is a crime, that being well-groomed is a sign of evil, speaking politely is a sign of idiocy, and so they do the opposite. It's a society that prides itself on being a loser. And so everybody, you see, this is what happens. If you tell a child who's misbehaving, that's okay, Johnny, do whatever you want, the child will become worse. If, on the other hand, you don't hit the child, you say, hey, look, Johnny, let me explain something. This is not the way you behave. This is the way you behave. It's like a tree is growing. What you want to do, if you know anything about growing trees, is you put stakes in the ground and you attach wires and you attach rubberized holders around it, the tree, till it gets its roots to make sure it grows straight. It's the same with a child. The mother and the father are the two poles on the side of that child. And you have to make sure the child grows straight. If you raise that child, as liberals do, not as parents, but as the child's friend, the child will grow up crooked. It doesn't know which way to grow. So if it tends to lean to the left, it'll bend over to the left. It might fall over before it even reaches maturity, because it never, ever set roots down into the ground. Same thing with the children of this country. I'm looking around the city, and what I see is an entire city filled with the Spock generation. They've grown up. And they grew up on the ethos of, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? So you get these putz morons on Friday nights, 10,000 of them take out bicycles to block traffic. No one throws their bicycles in the bay. Nobody arrests them. They gave it a name, critical mass. What are they? Spoiled brats, should be arrested, bicycle seized. But no, the city fathers and mothers don't exist. You have the same thing running the city as you have ruining the city. That's one example. But wherever you turn, you see the same mentality. If you feel like breaking a window at Bank of America, break the window. If you feel like spitting at somebody, spit at somebody. If you feel like cursing God, curse God. If you feel like hurting somebody, well, then run into them with a bicycle and say whoops, because the judge will let you off. If you feel like fornicating in the gutter, go ahead and fornicate in the gutter. Nancy Pelosi will say it's her family values. In San Francisco, you see, everything is warped.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Welcome back to the program. We're all talking about the atheist wing of the Democrat Party, which has become mainstreamed. We are talking about not only the God-hating element that has taken over the party, but the Israel-hating, America-hating, success-hating mobs that we're seeing on C-SPAN that now account apparently for the majority of the Democrat Party. They were once a party that represented minorities. It was a minority party. It was known as that. There's nothing wrong with that. That was a time when most minorities wanted to become mainstream Americans. But something happened along the way, and it became the mores of America changed so that people were told, don't come to Rome and do as the Romans do. Come to Rome and tell the Romans to drop dead and to behave the way you did in the country you ran away from. And then suck them for all of the welfare you can and spit on their flag and wave your flag. And that became the norm. It happened over a slow period of time. America fell asleep. And here's where we are today. Now, maybe Obama and this wing of the Democrat Party, which is what he really has mainstreamed and represents, incidentally, will awaken the vast middle that they're trying to appeal to. They keep saying the middle class, but you look, you can fool some of the people some of the time, some of the people all the time, but you can't fool Savage any of the time. The reason Obama is now pushing this middle class rubbish with the signs at the DNC convention hall and all is because it's exactly the middle class that he's attacked from the day he became president. Make no mistake about it, he's in power because of the wealthiest people on earth, like George Soros, like General Electric and their minions who pay no taxes, zero taxes. I can name 5 to 10 companies that pay no taxes. They're all supporting Obama because he gave them the loopholes. He let them have the loopholes, you idiots, you. How much do you have to know? They pay no taxes. So it's the middle class that he has hammered. Why? Because if you've studied communism, as I have since I've been 18 years old, the enemy of the communist is the bourgeoisie. Who's the bourgeoisie? It's the middle class. So first they destroyed your mortgage. That's right. They set you up and destroyed you and sucked you dry and killed your mortgage. Then said that they didn't do it. Then they used that excuse to devastate the economy itself. The very same people who are supporting Obama are the people who benefited from the implosion during the mortgage meltdown. Do you understand that? They shorted the mortgage, or they shorted the mortgage structures. The fiduciary instruments that were established by the gangs on Wall Street to build up the bubble were then used to destroy the people on the way out the door. So they got it going in and coming out. In other words, they devastated the middle class with their mortgage charade, right? They didn't lose the money. The people who lost their houses lost their money. And so the fact of the matter is some people made bigger fortunes than have ever been seen in the history of mankind. $900 million profits, $2 billion profits on the crisis. Where'd the money go? They're all Democrats. All went into the Democrat machine. So who did they attack? The bourgeoisie, the middle class. That's the ethos of the communists, the Bolshevik, attack the bourgeoisie, bring down the middle class. Why? Because in an elite society, if the old models still hold, there's a very wealthy class and then there's everyone else. There's no middle class. Because when I was a child, an immigrant son, I'll keep repeating it until you finally get it, the fact of the matter is, my mother used to proudly tell me that America was different than any other country in Europe, than any other country that she knew of in Europe, in that the middle class was very large in America. She said in America, this is when I was a kid, she said there's a very small middle class. There's only the very rich and the very poor. She said in America there's a very big middle class, as you well know. And, of course, the middle class, even at that time, was quite vast and quite segregated in its income level. From lower middle class, upper middle class. And I remember being a kid asking my mother, well, where do we fit? I wanted to hear we were the upper middle class. What did I know? I didn't know we were in the lower middle class. I mean, we weren't poor. We owned a car. We rented an apartment. Then eventually we owned a little attached house. So we were, I guess, part of the lower middle class at that time. I don't know exactly. But see, everyone is stratified in every society. I know when I was an anthropologist, if I lived in a village, there was a structure and a hierarchy within that village. Not, everyone wasn't equal. It wasn't communism. Children don't understand that. Wherever you go, any level of any society on earth, there is a hierarchy. There's the chief, there's the princes, the princesses. Then there's the ordinary person who slaves for the prince and the king or the chief. And then there are people who are so low class, as I learned, which I'm going to tell you, you never probably never read this in your anthropology books. It came to me the other night. There are people of such low caste, C-A-S-T-E, in historic societies that at birth they were told they were a member of the posthole class. A man told us that his ancestors were posthole people. I said, what the heck does that mean? He said, well, in the olden days here in these islands, when a king or a chief built a house, they dug four corners for his bure. And before they put the posts into the ground, they threw a live human being into the ground for good luck to fertilize the soil. He swore to me that's what went on in that society. That all changed when the blessed Christian missionaries arrived and taught them that it was wrong to throw people into a post hole. It was the Christian missionaries who stopped that from happening. Now go try to tell that to the jeering crowd at the DNC that it was the missionaries who actually saved the world from such barbarism. They're so warped, they don't even know what's right and what's wrong. They have no idea what's up and what's down, which is why they can vote for a man like Obama. It's why they can cheer Nancy Pelosi. It's why they can let Nancy Pelosi talk about attacking the rich when her wealth went up about tenfold since she became a congresswoman. It's unbelievable to me. You watch Bill Clinton, I couldn't believe what I was watching. He's talking about taxing the rich. The man is rich beyond belief. He became so wealthy after the presidency. He hangs around only with billionaires. Billionaires. And you think he means a word he said? How could he mean a word he said? Let's put it to you this way. When Bill Clinton flies around to his events or to his celebrations, parties, whatever he goes to, does he fly on a Gulfstream, do you think? Or does he ride a bicycle? How do you think he gets around? He gets around in his friend's airplanes, as anybody would if they had a friend with a Gulfstream. Wouldn't they? I mean, isn't that how it works? How stupid are people? Are they that dumb? They can't see through the charade? Well, I guess not. When a true genius appears, you can know him by this sign, that all the dunces are in a confederacy against him. Jonathan Swift. Let me read it again because you probably missed that in the multicultural studies. You probably didn't read Jonathan Swift. You probably read Fidel Castro. But let me read Jonathan Swift's one-liner again. When a true genius appears, you can know him by this sign, that all the dunces are in a confederacy against him. That was Jonathan Swift. Okay? So, there it is. There it is. What do you want to talk about? I'm having a good time. I actually am not watching C-SPAN today. I've turned it off. I could care less what the communist in chief says tonight. I watched Clinton. I was disgusted to think that a country would cheer a man who did such damage to the country. We used to call him Caligula when he was president, remember? We haven't forgotten. Those of us who know who Clinton really is called him Caligula. This one man degenerated the sexual mores of the entire Western world. Let me repeat that. This one single man, Bill Clinton, degenerated the sexual mores of the entire Western world. You remember when he got up and he said, I did not have sex with that woman? It wasn't the act of sex that was so ugly. It wasn't the fact that he was married and had sex with an intern that was so ugly. It was the fact that his lying about it by saying oral sex is not sex was so ugly. It destroyed the minds of the young. And so I don't want to go into details, but I learned through some very serious sociologists and doctors that one line, declaring oral sex not sex, degenerated an entire generation of young people. Do you know that? They actually don't believe that such an act is actual sexuality, all because of Caligula Clinton. So when I watched him speak last night, I was shocked that they rehabilitated this man and turned him into some grandfatherly figure as though he was all good and there was nothing tainting his past. Do you remember this man's past? So him embracing Obama is symbolically quite accurate. It's amazing to see them embrace each other. But the liberals are so whacked out with their own belief system that they think most of the world loves Bill Clinton. They don't understand that most of the people in the world who love God detest Bill Clinton. And it's only those who spit on God, spit on the family, spit on the church that think Bill Clinton is a great guy. They don't understand the bigger world. They live in their own world. So after that, I decided not to watch this anymore. What I did today was something unique. I embraced the beauty again of the city of San Francisco, which I love so much, which the liberals have had nothing to do with building, incidentally. Nothing. This crop of out-of-towners who moved here and ride around trying to be wild and crazy with their ugly outfits and their uglier behavior had nothing to do with building this city. Nothing. They've contributed zero to the culture or society or to the edifices itself. Nothing. Zero. All these out-of-towners who ape the wildness, and I hear their chains dragging. The louder they proclaim themselves to be progressives and free, the louder they proclaim their freedom and their progressivism, the more I hear their chains rattling. And so, therefore, today, what I did was very unique. I drove into the city, and I went to the top of Telegraph Hill, and I looked at the Filbert Street steps. And I looked at a certain Art Deco building that was featured in a Humphrey Bogart film in 1947. The building has a special meaning for me, which I'm not going to go into great detail about. Let me put it to you this way. I took a lot of pictures of that, the Filbert Street steps, the waterfront, the north waterfront looking down from that hill, that particular building. And Teddy and I really enjoyed the day. The sun is shining. It's just gorgeous. Just the most beautiful city in a way on Earth. Just the most beautiful place to be on Earth when you can just separate yourself from the human filth. When you can separate yourself from the human pollution in this city, it's still quite lovely when you can just turn off the loudspeakers of these liars that run the city. It's quite a beautiful place to be. And then we continued upon our way. What's happening is this, if I can tell you a little bit more on a personal level. Let's see. Six bestsellers in a row, including the novel, you know about Trickle Up Poverty, Trickle Down Tyranny, great books, all about Obama, which I still recommend you read. But along the way, I wrote Abuse of Power, which became number three on the New York Times list, which is almost unheard of for a first novel. Went to the list, but you see, because I'm a conservative, it didn't get any ink. Nobody wanted to know about it, but it's quite an accomplishment. There are people who are writing for 30, 40 years who have never had a best-selling book. That's the norm. 95, 98% of those who write novels never, ever hit any success with it. And then there are millions of people who believe they have a great novel in them. Many of you are listening and think you're going to write a great novel, and maybe you will. Maybe it won't be great, but it'll be your story or a novel, right? Well, I did it, and I hit the gong. And you know what happened is I forgot I did that. I forgot I did it because I was so beaten up by society and so beaten up by people who don't want me to exist, don't want me to breathe, don't want me to even take a moment's pleasure. They don't want me to have my short dance in the sun, that I decided to dance more in the sun. See, I once told you that I met a poet 30 years ago here in San Francisco, an Irish poet who's probably long dead. I forget his name. He was a great guy. I met him one drunken night somewhere out in the avenues. And of all the people I met in those days, he's the only guy I ever wrote a poem I remembered. And he wrote a book called The Short Dance in the Sun. And it stuck with me. It stuck with me because that really symbolizes our little firefly life. What we really are is a little burst of energy. And we come along in the eons, and each of us is a little firefly, and we do our short dance in the sun. And for a while, I thought the spark was going out in me. Things were going on in my life. I was enmeshed in terrible evil force I've ever encountered on the planet. But I beat it. I beat the evil force, and now I'm liberated. I'm free. And so not only is my memoir, my book of stories of my childhood coming out called Train Tracks in October, which I'm so excited to tell you about, and I really hope you go and check out some of the pictures, you know, me and the rifle team and whatnot, the charming stories that you've never heard before because they've not been told on the radio. But Jack Hatfield's next adventure is coming up in the spring, the second book in the Jack Hatfield series, and it's called A Time for War. Only this time the villains are not radical Islamists, as they were in Abuse of Power. This time the villains are the communist Chinese here in the United States of America, deeply implanted in this country. Fiction, of course, that's not true. They're our friends. Ask Henry Kissinger. Ask Madeleine Albright. Ask Sandy Berger. Ask Bob Dole. Ask all the other good people in America who went to work for the communist Chinese who decimated our industries like locusts. Ask all of the good politicians who went to work for those who've undermined our American industries, took out 10,000 manufacturing plants and destroyed them, decimated them like locusts. No, don't ask Michael Savage. Ask Henry Kissinger, who works for the communist Chinese. Ask him. He's a senior fellow and a real conservative, isn't he? Or ask some of the others who work for the Chinese companies. They'll tell you what's really going on. Don't listen to Michael Savage. They know what's best for you. And then look across the landscape of America and ask yourself where all the tool and die companies went. Where did all the steel companies go? Where did all the manufacturing plants go in this country? Why? Because of good people like Madeleine Albright and Henry Kissinger, in my opinion, and Bob Dole and all the other fine, upstanding political people in the United States of America. We have them, and we don't have them anymore. That's where they went. And so the next novel is called, in the spring, A Time for War. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. That book's written. I'm actually working on the third Jack Hatfield novel, which is why I came into town today with a camera and a recorder. And I'll be right back.
Savage.
So tonight, the Great One speaks, and he's going to give us a vision that is putatively built upon the legacy of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, according to an advanced copy of Obama's speech that we have seen. Now, as you know, FDR experimented with vast socialism in the country. Any historian who knows what they're talking about will tell you that. And it was based upon the socialism that was popular in the 1930s, that of Benito Mussolini, Adolf Hitler, and Joseph Stalin. Before the war, World War II, they were all experimenting with vast increases in the power of government, including FDR. And he stretched the limits of the Constitution, as Obama has done and will continue to do so. But what's intriguing to me on a personal scale, meaning with between Obama and Romney, is that if you remember last week, Mitt Romney spoke. Before him was a great speech by Rubio, very stirring, right? And before him was the great memorable speech by Clint Eastwood, which will be remembered by literate people forever as one of the greatest pieces of political theater ever done. Never mind what the drug addicts have to say. They don't count. Clint Eastwood's speech will go down in history as one of the greatest pieces of political theater. Then you had the great speech by Rubio, very moving, right? I couldn't believe how good that was. And then you had Mitt Romney. Now look at the difference between Romney's lead-ups or lead-ins and Obama. Obama took all the heavyweights and put them on the night before. He didn't even want to have Clinton on the same night as him because the man is so insecure. He didn't want to be in the umbra of their shadow. Do you understand that? The man is so insecure and so narcissistic that all of the speakers tonight are basically, you know, of a very low level in terms of public awareness. They're not leading into him. He has to shine on his own because he's insecure and he knows he won't look good. If he followed Bill Clinton, he would look like a child, wouldn't he? He would sound hollow and thin. So he had Clinton on last night. Okay, he couldn't even follow Nancy Pelosi. He couldn't follow Barbara Boxer. He couldn't follow any of them. So he's basically following nobody today. It's a minor point, but it's a significant observation for those of you who are political observers. Romney is a big enough man to let big men precede him as lead-ins. And the opposite is true about President of the United States. Eastwood, Rubio, Mitt, fabulous. So on michaelsavage.com, we have Dem's rejection of God, the turning point from WorldNet Daily. I put it up there because if you want to hear it all over again, you can play it on your own computer. Or we're going to play a piece of it in the next hour if you missed it, one of my divine encounters. Next one is Obama approved removing Jerusalem from platform. Duh. No kidding. The campaign at first said Obama had seen the language. He of course he removed it. He sat in Reverend Wright's church for 20 years. Who else removed God and Israel from the platform? It wasn't removed by a ghost. It didn't reflect Michelle and Barack Obama's worldview. In their worldview, Israel should just be another Mediterranean nation. And it at that should be defanged and declawed. If it exists at all, it should be a nation of matzah eaters and seltzer drinkers. Certainly not a proud Jewish nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
President Obama is protecting immigrants. Mitt Romney wants undocumented immigrants to self-deport. This election will determine whether high school valedictorians, football team captains, and student council presidents will be treated with respect or treated like suspects. Whether they reach their dreams or whether Mitt Romney turns their dreams into nightmares.
To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away.
That is the inimitable comedian Congressman Louis Gutierrez, Democrat of Illinois, demagoguing as usual, trying to paint Republicans as the evil, scary white devil. Welcome to the Savage Nation. That's what this whole campaign has come down to, is the meek Republicans who say nothing mean about the Democrats or Obama, and the other party, which demonizes the Republicans as a party of evil, scary white devils. What I love about Gutierrez's speech is that he says whether or high school valedictorians, football team captains, and student council presidents are treated with respect, as though all Hispanics are school valedictorians. They're all football team captains. They're all student council presidents. There's not a bad one amongst them. They're all at the top of the class. It's amazing to me what's happened in America after the Marxist revolution that we've had over the last number of years, where it's a perverse vision of reality, really, that the liberals have tried to inflict upon the rest of us. their perverse vision of reality sees the world where our original vision of hard work and enterprise is reversed, so that once rejected minorities are now assumed to have superior virtues in every way and everything. You understand that? For example, women are now thought to possess a greater intelligence than all men. Blacks are now assumed to have a keener insight to all things, if only they're given a chance, as you well know. Muslims are now at the top of the religious class, certainly not Christians and Jews. And so that's the country that we now live in as a result of the mental disorder called liberalism. That's how it's become. And what's amazing to me, looking in as an outsider, is how perverse this view is. You see, way before affirmative action, that is, before the government imposed grants and contracts be given to unqualified people who didn't earn it based upon their race or sexual orientation or immigrant status, in the days before the government imposed automatic advancement, how did rejected minorities move ahead? How did the Jews get so far? How did the Italians get so far in this country? Remember, the Jewish people never benefited from affirmative action. The Italian people didn't have affirmative action. Look how the Jews have succeeded without affirmative action. Look how the Italians have succeeded without affirmative action. Now we have a nation awash with a self-righteousness about advancing minorities that approaches the suicidally insane. And at the end line of that, of course, is the advancement of Obama with no known background, no known qualifications, no known achievements to have been pushed through Punahou High School, Occidental College, Columbia University, and then Harvard Law School with almost a zero track record. No one knows what he did in any of those schools. They have sealed the records. They've sealed. I mean, the man's the president. If the man was applying to become an FBI agent, he wouldn't have qualified simply by having associated with the radicals of his time, Bill Ayers, Bernadette Dorn, Reverend Wright. He would have not made it as his own Secret Service agent. They wouldn't have hired him. He would have failed that test. But yet, because we live in such an Alice in Wonderland world, a man who wouldn't qualify to be his own protector is now the president of the United States, supposed to protect all of us from enemies foreign and domestic. This is pretty amazing when you analyze it the way I do. But since I'm well known for my keen insights, I wouldn't expect you to understand what I just said. So in that case, what I'll say to you is, this is the Savage Nation. We're all waiting for the great man to speak tonight about his vision for destroying America and turning us into a mini South American banana republic, which is what his speech is going to be about. If only those who succeed would succeed a little less. If only those who are collecting food stamps would do a little less. If only the government could do a lot more, the world would be a better place. I think we've heard this before. I think it's been tried before. It's been tried in Mussolini's Italy. It's been tried in the Third Reich. It was tried in the Soviet Union. See, these methods are not new. They're pretty well known. But if you look at the Democrat Party today, what you see is so clear. If you cleanse the doors of perception, you will see reality as it is infinite. And since I am clairvoyant sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I can't see clearly. Over the last few weeks, I'm very, very clear thinking. Everything cleared up for me. And I look at the Democrats. I see the audience. It looks like a reflection of Reverend Wright's church. God-hating, Israel-hating, America-hating, success-hating mob. Screaming, don't put God in the platform. Get Israel out of the platform. No. Hate Israel. Hate God. Hate America. Hate success. Just take what you can get from it. And so you have a very clear choice. But, you know, I don't know whether I'm speaking to the converted here or what. I don't know how many of you listeners have not made up your mind already. I think everyone's made up their mind. We should have voted 6 months ago and saved the money and given it to the blind in Kenya, as far as I'm concerned. If we could have just spent this money that we're wasting on these conventions on eyeglasses for those nearsighted in the Ukraine. I'm watching the election now, frankly, as though I'm watching an election in the Ukraine. That's about how I feel like I'm watching it in translation. I watch the speeches now with the sound off, and I feel like I'm watching Ukrainian politicians screaming about the other party. The only thing missing is a good fist fight where one burly Ukrainian punches the other one in the nose, and they jump over the... You know, I like the Korean parliament the best. They're very passionate. And when they get mad at each other, instead of just saying the other guy is no good, they leap across the podium and punch each other. At least the people get a good show for their money from the clowns. You know, here we don't even get anything for our money. The only people who are enjoying it are the apparatchiks there who are using the, let us say, ladies of the night and the, you know, the facilities of Charlotte, North Carolina, whatever they may be. Because you know very well that it wasn't limited to those old nasty white guys at the Tampa convention. You know that the Democrats know how to get down and party better than those old stiff Mormons. So you don't see any of that reportage, do you? You don't see any of the drunks wandering the streets, the brothels in full swing, the busloads of hookers brought into Charlotte. That didn't make it to your local newspaper. No. This is all a party of ideologically pure people, as in the ex-Soviet Union. The only thing missing are the young explorers. We haven't seen them yet. So if you care to talk about the Ukrainian election that we're watching, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. And when does Kerry speak? When we play Swift Boats Are A-Coming, their sales are in sight. When does he get to talk? Is he doing it now? 5:30. Oh, that's where we're going to play Swift Boats Are A-Coming, their sales are in sight. Idaho, Chris, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage. I'm a big fan.
I was wondering
what you were mentioning earlier about San Francisco. Well, why is it that it seems that the liberals overrun the beautiful cities in our country? You know, San Francisco, Seattle, Northeast, Northwest. Why do you think
I don't know. It's a theorem I developed, which is that the higher the LQ, that is, the higher the liberal quotient, the higher the LQ, the better coffee you can get and the better the food is. It's just a pretty interesting phenomenon. Like if you go across the bay here in San Francisco to Berkeley, they have wonderful food and it's overrun by the most despicable politics in America. But they're all foodies. I don't know. It's something to do with when you reject God and you don't live for the afterlife and you live only for this life, you become an expert on coffee and food.
Interesting.
I don't know the exact answer. I'm not a theologian, but if I were forced to write a paper on it, that would be the paper I would write for a sermon. Because it's actually true. In other words, the people who live for the next world and the next life and live for the hereafter, they're actually willing to put up with very slim things in life. And they don't care. You give them a cup of coffee, they're happy. You know, an average meal, they're happy. But here, everything has to be superb and exact, like the ancient Romans or the ancient Greeks. They were experts at food and cuisine and sexual behavior because they didn't believe in the hereafter. They lived in the here and now. I guess that may be a partial answer. If that's not clairvoyant enough for you, I don't know what else to say. But it's absolutely true that the higher the LQ, the better the food to be found there, and the higher the LQ, the better the varieties of coffee are. There's no question. I mean, you can get coffee in San Francisco. I almost had a heart attack today waiting in Starbucks before the show for a coffee. I ground my toes into the soles of my shoes. I almost wore my nails out on the counter as Mr. Precious ordered the coffee, and Mr. Precious behind the counter, who will probably last 2 weeks before he has a nervous breakdown and has to go back into rehab. The guy, they gave him, you know, a part-time. It's sad. I don't put the kids down. They work. I know they're struggling. I know they all have master's degrees in poli-sci or ethnic studies, or what else can they get a job other than as a barrister? I don't laugh at them. I've been a busboy. I've been a puppet, a poet, a pauper. You know, I've done it all. So I understand the starting jobs are horrible, they're disgusting. But I hustled as a kid. You know why I hustled when I was a waiter or a busboy? Because the captain at the table yelled at me, and he said, move your behind, or I'll fire you. But not today. You go in the Starbucks, it's like watching glue dry, not paint. I don't mean crazy glue. This is slow, like Elmer's glue, which takes 24 hours to harden. Everything they do is in super slow motion. I'm not used to it. I mean, I grew up in New York. I left a long time ago, but I still have a certain pace. Everything is too slow for me. They drive sluggishly. They eat sluggishly. They order sluggishly. They talk sluggishly. But the environment's gorgeous. And then one thing burned me up on the way out. It isn't even my business. See, this is the kind of value system I have. As I'm leaving Starbucks, I see a college girl, like a graduate, sitting there with took over a whole table. Computer, laptop, working away like it's her living room. Not even a cup of coffee. And I muttered to myself, holding my coffee, I muttered, not even a cup of coffee, and she's sitting in this place. They're not even embarrassed to do this. I've seen them come in with lunches from home, and sit in Starbucks like they own it with an attitude, eating their little vegetarian sandwiches, which leave them unable to think. No iron, no B6, no calcium in their food. Their brains aren't working properly. But they take over an entire table, and they don't even order a coffee from the establishment. I would have been embarrassed to do that as a kid. I was raised by my mother. She said, if you go in a place, you got to buy something, even if they don't ask you to. Why? Well, she explained to me, there's rent, there's electricity, there's heat, there's taxes. So the guy won't make a living unless you order something. You couldn't even go into an automat and sit there as a kid in New York. You got to go and buy a piece of pie. They made you buy it. But if you had self-respect, you ordered something or they moved you along. But not in the America of today. See, America today is all a giant college campus. It's filled with all of the college grads. And they don't want a jarring experience of reality. They want to come out after 10 years of a college experience. I did it in 4. They did it in 10. They can't get a job. If I couldn't get a job, I took a lower job. I did whatever I had to do, take 3 jobs. They don't want to be jarred by anything. So, in other words, they jaywalk. They think they're on the campus and you're going to come to a halt for them. They sit in a cafe and they don't order anything because, after all, it's sort of like the cafeteria at Colgate or wherever they went, or Peppermint College, wherever they went, and where you didn't have to order anything. Of course, it was a college cafeteria. So today, everywhere they go is sort of an extension of that. So they walk out in front of a moving car. They expect you to stop because on a campus, there are no cars. On a campus, you can ride a bicycle upside down and naked. And so they ride their bicycles virtually upside down and naked into oncoming traffic. And if the mean cop says anything to them, why, they go to the ACLU. And if somebody looks at them wrong, why, they blow the whistle and all the girls come running out. Then they call DHS and Big Sis comes down and cracks down on the man who yelled at them. See, it's all a college campus in the contemporary world where liberalism, the mental disorder, has now become mainstreamed. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So if you look at C-SPAN or you get a replay of the audience, it's pretty clear what this is. I mean, you got a very clear choice here. So now you got the God-hating, Israel-hating, America-hating, success-hating mobs. They look like a Reverend Wright's, you know, constituency sitting there on a bigger scale. And all you see is the constituency of today's Democrat Socialist Party. And we got an advanced copy of the speech tonight. He's gonna try and channel FDR. FDR, as you well know, had tremendous press behind him. He was our personal Stalinist. Now, many people lionize Franklin Delano Roosevelt, but if you actually analyze his policies, he prevented the Depression from diminishing. He delayed the Depression. He got us into World War II in a way, thank God he did, but he got us into World War II to end the economic doldrums. As you know, war is good for the economy. He imposed super state-run entities and enterprises on the order of Joseph Stalin and Benito Mussolini, grand public works projects to pull us out of the Great Depression. And FDR is in one of the mentors of Obama, but there are many other mentors mixed in, Franklin Marshall, Aleister Crowley, those of you who understand who I'm referring to. I mean, you have to understand it. You got to understand that Obama has a bit of a hip background. And so if I say Aleister Crowley, I'm not just throwing it out. See, he refers to it. I mean, he had a little bit of the hippie beatnik upbringing because he's from that generation. So he had to be exposed to some of that writing. So it wasn't just big government types. It was also anti-establishment literary people. You know, they're extolling certain kind of behaviors, et cetera. But that's what makes him such a wonderful, fascinating creature. Not fit to be president, of course, but a fascinating individual to write about in a novel. Unfortunately, we're living through the Frankenstein regime that we're so afraid of because you don't know where this Frankenstein, where it could go next. So tonight he's going to channel FDR without telling us the other goblins in his past that are liable to pop out of the closet. We don't know who else can come out. Tonight, it's the good FDR. I don't know whether he is going to affect the cigarette holder and a certain behavior, but we don't know. He could affect the cigarette holder at some point. Remember, it was Hillary Clinton who said that. Didn't she say that was Eleanor Roosevelt was her mentor? She's halfway around the world while he's giving the speech. Does that make sense to you? Why is she distancing herself from this? Because she wants to run after it all implodes and the Democrat Party is in shambles. That's why.
Savage.
So as you know, tonight's the big night. The chosen one will be giving his speech. Now, they moved Obama's big speech from a 74,000 outdoor stadium to a smaller indoor arena, citing bad weather, but it's perfect weather in the area. It was because they couldn't fill it. And they have it in a 20,000-seat Time Warner indoor arena. That way they could show 3,000, 4,000 people outside dying to get in. So that's number one. He's in trouble. I mean, he's fighting for his political life. Everybody knows that. It is the Republicans to lose again, and lose it they probably will. Why? Because I can tell you what's coming. I can tell you exactly what's happening. Obama's going to attack Romney. Romney's going to stand there like a punching bag. See, Romney's too good a Christian. He turns the other cheek. Instead of ripping back and citing the 10 things Obama has done and not done, the problem. Obama's going to beat him up. And Romney's going to take it because he's been taught, you know, not to be a bad boy. That's what I see coming. I know you don't want to hear it again, but okay. You're going to hear it anyway because I can predict what's coming. I could see what they did last night. One speaker after the other demonized the evil white male, including the evil white males who spoke. Clinton got up there and attacked the evil white males as though he suddenly became a person of color. I couldn't believe it. He acted as though he was a poor man of color rather than a rich white man who was once president. And they ate it up. Him they loved. Him they loved. So that's what's coming. 40% chance of rain and possible thunderstorms. So Obama's big speech will move, and he's going to be FDR tonight without the cigarette holder. Definitely not with a cigarette holder. Poor guy. You know, it's a terrible job. Look at the gray hair. They gray out fast towards the campaign time. Skinny, gray hair. I don't know. It's a good diet, I guess. Well, you don't have to eat very much. You know, look, they all lose weight, look gaunt. Who would want to do that for a job? I wouldn't enjoy that. His wife's enjoying it a lot. She's having a good time. The women seem to be stronger. They always are. What was her name? Ann Romney loved it. Couldn't get her off the stage. Michelle loves it. She never looked better. I was never a fan of her. She's glowing. The woman is glowing. Looks fantastic. Anne looked good. Michelle looked good. The women are having a great time. The men are like collapsing inside from the stress. Turning gray. It's horrible. The Bank of America Stadium, which seats 74,000, where U.S. President Barack Obama was set to give his acceptance speech. They don't have a dome there. They don't have a dome. I could fill a 20,000 seater. 74, forget about it. I couldn't do it. I could fill a 20 if I wanted. I'm not doing a speech, by the way. Remember I told you I was doing a September 22nd? Many of you flooded me with what's going on. I delayed it owing to certain things going on in my life at the time. So I'm devoting myself. Another time I'll do it. Now do it another time. You should buy train tracks and read it. You'll get all of me you ever wanted and then some. You know, 6 months ago, Barack Obama said he really didn't want to, you know, run again. Then he changed his tune. He said, well, I really have to run to finish the job. Remember? For a while, it was like, I don't really need to do this. I don't want to do it. I think he wanted out. Now he's in again. Are you in? I hate going on my email now. Are you in? Are you in? I don't want to see them anymore. Every minute I turn on my email or AOL, it's like, are you in? Are you in? I don't want to be in. Can I just send an email without being brainwashed? Are you in? Are you in? Are you in? Every time I go on AOL, are you in? Then they got it, too. The Republicans started to buy time there. Are you in? Are you in? No, I'm not in. I'm just sending an email. Leave me alone. It's like the Ukraine. I feel like I'm in the Ukraine. This endless election is like, it just doesn't end. I mean, when is this going to end already? You know, America's going to have a nervous breakdown after the election, no matter what happens. We're going to be exhausted from this political class of clowns. They're not even entertaining. They're boring. They wear ugly clothing. They say boring things. Nothing inspires the people. And everyone knows it's a giant waste of money. And then what? Who do you think is going to be back and center stage once the politicians leave our public mind? Who do you think is going to be up there? There we go again. The sluts of Hollywood falling down. They're in rehab. Here she is, 9 months pregnant, smoking a cigarette and drinking Jack Daniels, but she's a vegan. That's all. That'll be all over the. She's a vegan, but she smokes in the ninth month and drinks Jack Daniels and snorts Coke. But don't worry about it. She's going into rehab after she gives birth. That's what you're going to be seeing soon after the. That's what you're going to be seeing after that. And then you'll see another America hating putz after another. One after the other, the shoot the mouth of hating the country, making a fortune. Why don't they just move to South America? See how well they do there. Let them try China. They love China. They love Scotland. What are the liberals' favorite countries that they cite, countries that are better than America? This country stinks. Most of the Upper East Side of Manhattan, college teachers. America stinks, man. It's much better over there. Where? Well, Denmark, for example, far better. Norway, much better. Better country. Denmark, Norway, Holland, great countries. So what are you doing here? Well, why shouldn't I be here? The tenure's better. Tenure's better. The taxes are lower. That's why we say tax the rich, because we're still Danish citizens. We have it both ways to Sunday. Oh, yeah, we have a house in Vermont as well that we bought with our tenured money because it's terrible. America's horrible. So the countries that they love so much, like, they don't live there, though. Well, what are the top five countries that liberals cite as better than America? They always say there's no gun violence there. That's right, because there's no guns, and they're not flooded with immigrants like we are. See, when you have gangs coming in with machine guns and tattoos running from their neck to their groin, and they're basically the descendants of the Aztecs, and they know nothing but cutting out hearts and killing, of course you could have violence in a country. So it's amazing. It's a pretty good connection between the type of immigrant we're getting, the illegals, by the way. Oh, yeah, I know. I'm sorry. They're all valedictorians and football captains, according to Louis Gutierrez. Yeah, every one of them. Top of the class. Every one of them. Just go to a mall and take a look at what's going on. 14-year-olds pushing carriages with two or three babies, pregnant. Take a look. You don't go to a mall. When has Biden last been in a mall? He believes all the illegal aliens are school valedictorians, football team captains, and mathematicians. They're all Einsteins. They've been oppressed by the white man, but given a chance, they're going to invent the equivalent of the atomic bomb. But for the good of mankind, not for the bad. How did minorities who did not have government support, like the Jewish people, get so far in America? How? They didn't need affirmative action. They didn't need a government to interfere and put them at the top of the class. As a matter of fact, They were picked upon. They weren't allowed in. Harvard didn't let Jews in for many a year. No Jews allowed. Then when they did, they were just terribly treated. It was true for many people. Italians were also picked on. How'd they get so far in this country? They didn't have the government help them. Hey, did you ever hear about hard work and talent and brains? Does that work? Well, not in Obama's vision for America. In fact, those are deficits in Obama's vision for America. Anyone who works too hard is suspect. He's considered a counter-revolutionary or a bourgeois, let's say. Greedy. If you work too hard, you're greedy. Are you kidding? Your father built a business and has 35 stores now? He must have been some greedy POS, man. Ugh. What did he work so hard for, man? Why didn't he just jaywalk and drink a frothy Starbucks? You know, I mean, he could have relaxed, man, just, you know, enjoyed himself. Watched the seagulls. He pushed himself so hard, so un-American. It's like a different, like a slackers everywhere you turn in San Francisco. Well, whatever. Different strokes for different folks. I'm driven to work. I don't know what's wrong with me. I was pushed to work. I come from a work ethic background. From age 5, I was taught to work. And I don't want to stop. I could stop, could have stopped, didn't want to stop, could stop. There's nothing out there. It's a vacuum. The world's empty. There's nothing out there. But creation for a man like me. I'm bristling with ideas, new novels, new nonfiction, new books, new ideas. It doesn't stop. I guess it's a disease. I guess the government has to treat me. Who is this man with so many books and so many ideas? Who does he think he is? He's an affront. He is an affront, an absolute affront to this generation can't use the word. He is an absolute affront to this generation of Obama worshipers. How dare he work so hard? How dare him at his age work so hard? Do you realize he's standing in the way of a young novelist somewhere in San Francisco who has written a heartfelt book about the beauties of liberalism, communism, socialism, Marxism, Fabian socialism, Leninism, Trotskyism, and nobody will publish him because there's a conspiracy against that kind of writing. Yes, they're only publishing that kind of cheap junk that Michael Savage writes. that Philistine, how dare he write that? He should not even be permitted to write. As a matter of fact, if the man has written one bestseller after another, that's an argument to ban him from writing. Because, you see, in the ex-Soviet Union, they banned private property because you had to limit it. I mean, otherwise, few people would own it all. So you had to ban private property and let the good folks in the government own the private property and let everyone have a free room. You know, that's how it worked in good old Mother Russia. It's the model for the Occupy movement, Nancy Pelosi and Obama. Same exact thing. Well, it's the same with creativity. I mean, if you've written 28 books, isn't that enough? If you've had 6 New York Times bestsellers in a row, I think the government should step in and stop the man from writing. Because after all, for every success that there is on the New York Times list, it means some, well, very, very sensitive individual somewhere in the bowels of San Francisco isn't being published. The agents, the editors, the publishers are running after the Philistines like Savage. They're not looking for the subtlety of the man living in the garret or in the parents' toilet somewhere out in the suburbs. If only they would search harder, they would find the sensitive books. Now, it doesn't matter if anyone reads them. In fact, if we had a sane government, they would find these writers writing about the virtues of socialism, and they would print the book. Ultimately, a government that's fair would print the books of all of these people. A minimum print run of 100,000. Of course, how are you going to get anyone to read them? Well, that's simple. You disperse them in the white suburbs, and then you hire the Black Panthers and you give them truncheons and guns, and they go around to each house and they give people exams on whether they've read the book or not. Now, that's fairness. That's the vision of fairness that the Democrats would like to see enacted. After all, we need to disperse success. We need to spread it around. Can't have all these people having so few people having so much success. Now, would it apply to a man, for example, like Woody Allen? Well, we would suspend the rules in that case, because although he's done a lot of movies and he takes up all of the budgets and the money and the thing is, though, he's such a sensitive artist and he so hates America that he would be an exception. The government would let him continue to make movies that no one goes to, because the sensibilities of a man like Woody Allen, for example, are sort of in tune with this mentality. You see what I mean? This is the world that you got to get used to. And you get ready for it. So this is the subtext of the Reverend Wright congregation that you're seeing called the DNC. I'll be right back.
Savage.
That's great. It's like watching a joke. The whole thing's a joke. I mean, I don't even listen to them anymore. We're going to listen to them. I mean, there are politicians. You know, you go to a museum. I'm a museum goer. I love great art. So there's a painting. I forget who. I talked about it before. Done about the era in America when we were a frontier nation. And it was called The Politician. I forget the artist. And it shows guys, farmers, sitting around like a Cracker Barrel in a, you know, dimly lit, small little place, and there's the slick politician is sitting there talking to them, trying to mesmerize them with his malarkey. It was called The Politician. Has anything changed? I mean, Slick Willie was up there last night. Suddenly he was rehabilitated. We forgot he degenerated the entire Western world. He said, I did not have sex with that woman. Then he said that oral sex is not sex. He demeaned the whole meaning of the word sexuality. Warp the minds of millions of young people. I mean, it's true. It's real. You know, we used to call him Caligula. Good luck to him. Man makes a fortune giving speeches to people and talks about the rich. His friends are all the billionaires. Well, who do you think he hangs around with? The people from the homeless camps? So when Bill Clinton goes out to a party, you think he hangs with the Occupy movement? I don't think so. Tend to think he hangs around with the billionaires in various parts of the world. Sort of the way it's been working from the beginning of time. You know, you kind of move to that level. You generally don't work your way down the ladder of success. Generally, you try to work your way up the ladder of success. So now that he's up there, he knows that it's popular to bash those at the top of the ladder. So he says, the people at the top of the ladder are garbage. They're vermin. You shouldn't like them. You should tax them to death. Whatever you have to do, those rich white guys, who they think they are. And he's standing there, and I don't know that. And then, yay! And cheering him. The whole thing is like a madness. So I really do feel like it's Alice in Wonderland. So how could I take them seriously? Then you look in the auditorium, like Reverend Wright's church. Hateful, hateful, misshapen. I never saw a mob like this. It's like Todd Browning's freak show. Okay, well, we want God in the platform. Nay. Well, how about Jerusalem? Are you kidding? Jerusalem's not the capital of the Jewish state. It's the capital of the Palestinians. Nay. The three, nay. And nays were so loud. All right, the A's have it. What? What do you mean the A's have it? 80% of them said no. We hate Israel and we don't believe in God. We're atheists. We believe in if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? What do you mean God? What kind of God talk is this? We're the Democrats. We're not into God and guns. We're against God and guns. It's surprising they have a plank up there of banning guns. They could have put that into the plank too. Let's see. Do we want God in the plank? Nay. You want Jerusalem? Nay. How about banning guns? Yay. I mean, all right, so what do you expect? This is the splinter of the splinter. This is the splinter took over the whole party. There are no mainstream Democrats anymore. Where are they? Have you heard one yet? So you have a clear choice between the sheepish, middle-of-the-road, meek Republican Party, the check pants Republican gang, the Rockefellians, the Rockefeller Republicans, the kind of guys that wouldn't have me in their country club, and if they did, I wouldn't join anyway. That group, you have them, the elite white guys. I know, that window dressing, but okay. I don't mind them. They're okay. And then you have the other disenfranchised white people with an axe to grind. It's unbelievable how clear this choice is. So now we're going to have the debates coming up. Debates are coming up. Here's what's going to go on in the debates. Obama's going to rip Romney to shreds. First word out of his mouth is, it's all a setup. Republicans lost in advance. Who are the umpires? The umpires are all liberals, well-known liberal operatives. Not one umpire is neutral, meaning the what do they call them? Moderators. Some moderators. How can you be a moderate moderator if you're a lifetime liberal operative? It's impossible. See, there's not one conservative moderator. They could have chosen someone from Fox News. Someone, choose one of the girls, a leg crosser. They all have those stupid earphones on. They look so... Do they understand how stupid they look? Some of the prettiest girls... I mean, they look... What's with the headphones? They look idiotic. They all look like that guy. Who was the guy who killed his career with the tank from a Democrat years ago? He was doing well in the polls. Dukakis. Remember, he almost ran. He was getting ahead. The little, doing great. Greek guy from Boston. Doing great. Then all of a sudden, they put him in a tank, and he popped up. He looked like a chipmunk with the earphone. Same thing. You look at the convention. Does anyone have any idea what they look like? Are they all on the same medication as Tom Brokaw? The girls from Fox, they look despicably idiotic with those headphones. I thought headphones today were like a new generation. Why don't they have like they're invisible and you're like, you know, the kids have headphones you can't even see, right? What are they wearing? Oh, it's to show that they were. Remember they used to show off in the media with, what were those, flak jackets. Whenever they went to a convention, they had like safari jackets. Remember in the 70s? It was very cool for the media class to run around with safari jackets to show that they had like ektachrome in their pocket. You had to go with their Nikons, 8 Nikons on their shoulders and ektachrome in the various pouches. You know what I'm saying? They were really like photojournalists. Everyone had to have that kind of like vest, like with different pouches. So like, it's like an act, you know? It's like a journalist monkey. So now we have journalist monkeys with, wearing like big headphones. Why? Big headphone means that they're big. Big journalists. You're at a big convention, big auditorium, big important people like me sitting here now. Here I am, Sean Hannity, although I am only a wall banger inside and scared to death that people will find out. I don't know a word. I am here with the headphones. I'm interviewing a girl now with headphones. Therefore, we must know what we're talking. What are they doing? The kids walk around with invisible things in their ears. The technology is there for invisible earphones. Why do they have to wear such big headphones? They all look like Dukakis to me. But then it's one man's opinion. And tonight, of course, the big one, the big speech. You know already, he wrote in advance, the most sterling speech, although he was down, he's up. He saved the day. The man is back. Obama's back. It's front page news already. They printed the papers already. Never saw a speech like this in our life. The man pulled it out of the hat. Just we thought he was down, he's up. Oh, my God, he saved himself. He saved the party. Stop the presses.
Savage.
We'll be right back.
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This takes the cake. If you haven't heard it yet, you're going to hear it now. The Democrat delegate who says she wants to kill Mitt Romney. Now, of course, because she's of color, it will not be investigated by the Secret Service. No doubt she'll go to work for the Obama administration.
I tell you, Romney will destroy this country. He became governor, president of the United States. No, I think he will destroy this country completely. Romney will destroy this country. I don't believe him. If I see him, I would like to kill him.
Yes, that's the kind of peace-loving constituency Barack Obama has. Another is Congressman Emanuel Cleaver.
We have, in many instances, been hit. You know, they are a liberal, they are progressive. Look, if being liberal and progressive means that I care for children and whether they go hungry, color me liberal. Color me Democrat. If being a Democrat means that I'm concerned about our seniors in the sunset of life, color me Democrat. Color me liberal. Let's do more than just say the Pledge of Allegiance. Let us live it. Let us embody one nation under God, with liberty and justice for all. And that means every one of us. To our nation's motto, E pluribus unum. Out of many, one. Yes, yes, we are one. We are one. We might be black, brown, yellow. It does not matter. We are one. We might be poor, we might be rich, but we are one. We might be up or we might be down, but we are one. We might be up, we might be down. We are one.
I guess he still has some of Obama's hope, unlike most Americans who never had it or lost it.
When everything is gone, you continue to hope. As long as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob sits on the throne of grace, Mr. President, hope on! Hope on! Hope on! We are people of hope! Mr. President, hope on!
And here is Congressman Luis Gutierrez, another stellar example of humanity, who says openly he wants to steal your votes and give them to illegal aliens.
President Obama is protecting immigrants. Mitt Romney wants undocumented immigrants to self-deport. This election will determine whether high school valedictorians, football team captains, and student council presidents will be treated with respect or treated like suspects, whether they reach their dreams or whether Mitt Romney turns their dreams into nightmares.
Well, unfortunately, there isn't an option to press one for English.
En esta elección hay una decisión clara, alternativas claras. Barack Obama dice, voy a proteger los inmigrantes y permitir que los jóvenes se queden aquí en este país. The obstruction of the Republican Party and Mitt Romney is not new. Every time we've expanded civil rights in America, someone tried to stop us.
Caroline Kennedy is on at the DNC tonight, whoever she is. She keeps saying the words, you know, you know, you know. No, I don't know. Explain yourself, you Spock baby, you.
You know, I think that, you know, I bring, you know, my life experience to this. And, you know, that includes, you know, being a mother. You know, I understand sort of those choices that women make. It includes, you know, being a lawyer. I've written 7 best-selling books, you know, 2 on the Constitution, you know, anthologies about American history and values, political courage. You know, and I've really tried to encourage people to go into public service.
And here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. I don't know. People say it was one of the best shows I've ever done, where I say this: the Democrat rejection of God yesterday at the convention was the turning point. And WorldNet Daily wrote the article up. I really recommend that you hear the soundbite. I mean, but the fact is that Michael Savage said, not Simple Simon, but Michael Savage said, the Democrats' rejection of God is the turning point. At least I hope so. And I had a divine moment at a memorial outside a Jewish wedding. The Democratic Party's symbolic dismissal of God with the removal and forced return of his name to its platform by party officials amid loud boos from delegates could be the turning point in the 2012 presidential campaign, said talk radio host Michael Savage. Savage told his listeners, this is a big moment. America is disgusted with this party of atheists and America haters. The scene at the DNC was a sharp contrast to Savage's experience Tuesday night at a Jewish wedding held at a cold, foggy, and windy Presidio in San Francisco Bay. The site of the wedding, next to the graves of thousands of war dead. Savage said as he stood behind the area where the ceremony took place, he noticed a small bronze plaque in the ground that read, "In memory of all those who died on D-Day." I looked up and I said to the rabbi, "Do you realize that if it wasn't for these men who died on D-Day, none of us would be here today? We'd all be lampshades, we'd be dead." The rabbi then grabbed my hands and we danced around the memorial stone. Soon five more men joined in, then 10. It was like something out of Chagall, Savage said, referring to the Russian-French-Jewish artist. 10 men dancing around this memorial to the fallen of World War II. The profundity was overwhelming to me, Savage said. Well, you can read all about it on michaelsavage.com. It's really not to be missed. And you have to understand these are epic times. We have our first naked Marxist president. I don't care how many thousands of people say that's not true. Just look at his politics and his policies. Listen to Reverend Wright's sermons. Look who he surrounds himself with. Look at the czars, and you'll understand that he's the first Marxist president. He is like Chavez in the early days of Chavez in Venezuela. You've got to understand what's going on here. This is how it goes. It's getting worse by the day. Everything's in play. Everything's at stake. What else is on michaelsavage.com? Remember Masters and Johnson, the sex gurus? Well, their mature son, 63 years old, was caught exposing himself to female cops who were going by in a kayak. Wow. America's ugliest mansions. They look garish, gaudy, and full of pretension. Hey, I'll take one. Have you seen Michael Savage on his high school rifle team? There I am. A little check above my head. It says me. Third from the right, holding a Mossberg rifle. Michael Savage. This picture is from my forthcoming book, Train Tracks, due out next month from HarperCollins. If you love me and you love my stories, I suggest you order your advance copy on Amazon right now, Train Tracks. All this and more right here on the Savage Nation. Wait, hang on before I go. You know, I hate seeing my electric meter spinning around like some crazed hamster wheel. Running the AC is like watching dollar bills fly out of poorly insulated windows. It costs thousands to replace windows, but for a fraction of the cost, you can put gorgeous energy-saving solar shades over your windows from Blinds.com. Blinds.com saves my listeners and me in so many ways. They offer a huge selection of designer blinds, shades, shutters, and drapes at prices lower than Lowe's and Home Depot. By posting free online how-to videos that make transforming any room in about 20 minutes very easy and by yourself. Listen, by making measuring so utterly goof-proof that even if you mismeasure, which is next to impossible, they'll remake it for free. Get free color samples, free shipping, no sales tax in most states, plus expert installers if you need one. Save an extra 20% on top brands through July 31st at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, where prices absolutely crush home improvement stores. Don't be blind. Go to Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Did you get it? Blinds.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here we are on the Savage Nation waiting for the big campaign to begin. It's been going on, it seems, for my entire adult life. I have no idea why anyone would support these parties such called conventions. They began in 1856. My contention is that with the invention of electricity and then the telephone, there was no longer a need for a Republican or Democrat convention. In that, nominees were essentially selected earlier and earlier until eventually the conventions were no longer what they originally called for. In other words, they had a convention so that representatives could come there by horseback and then pick a candidate. This has been going on for 150 years. Do you think the waste of money that we see is something to be respected on the part of Democrats and Republicans? I don't. Email in the name of the candidate and cut out the partying. The country is drowning in debt. The government is printing money as fast as you can say the word money. They don't stop the presses going. The projections are nightmarish. So what do we need conventions for? What do you mean tax more? Stop the conventions. Use that money for whatever social programs you want. Okay, let's take some callers. I've talked enough, at least for a while. In WRKO in Boston, Massachusetts, Doug, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
What you're missing is neither party cares. Everything is orchestrated for the benefit of the massive international corporations. Everything from the euro, stripping all the countries of their sovereign rights. Every single thing is orchestrated. Anyone that believes that the president or Congress are running anything is delusional.
Hold on. You've made an awful lot of sweeping generalizations, which I disagree with, incidentally. Let's start with what the president has done that no other president has done before him that was not done by corporations, which is the National Defense Resources Preparedness Executive Order of March 16th, which gives him the powers of martial law. How can you accuse a corporation of doing that? Oh, the professor from Harvard hung up. I guess the Harvard prof hung up because he didn't have a student that he could browbeat with the threat of a D or an F.
It's the corporations, man. You got to understand, you're ignorant if you think there's any difference between either of them. It's those evil corporations like Burger King and Walmart. They're the reason we're in trouble. Yeah, it's the corporation.
You mean like the Harvard Corporation? You mean like the corporations that support the Harvard Corporation? You mean like the wealthy Americans who give money to the Harvard Corporation so that ignoramuses like him could call a show like this because he has a tenured professorship where he doesn't even have to work for a living? He can just call in the job?
Those corporations, man. Yeah, all power to the people.
Who would pay for tenure if there were no corporate grants? Who would pay for NPR if there were no corporate grants? You know, Romney has said that he'll cut back funding on NPR. I don't believe it. He's just trying to appease a certain element of the pie. But boy, is that overdue. If NPR ever had to compete in the marketplace, they wouldn't be around too long, you know, with their fugue music that they like to play to make believe they're high class. All you got to do is play a concerto in between breaks, and they swoon over you. Ooh, how intelligent. And then every once in a while, throw in an English professor. I mean, somebody with a fake English accent from Brooklyn. Who's a, an Anglophobe, an Anglophile. And then if you... What is that music I'm hearing in the background? Huh? Something is leaking into my show. Do you have that Savage NPR piece we once put together, that fake one? See if you could find that one. That was fun. We did it a while ago. If you really, really, really want to impress liberals, what you do is you play kind of very sad classical music between takes, and then they really think you're intelligent. Then you have a pseudo-British accent to go with it. That's even a better topper. And then if you really want to sound intelligent, you throw the word green in about every six sentences. And then say global or globalization. And then every 12 sentences you attack corporate greed. And then before long you sound like you're ready for a professorship at UC Berkeley. Massachusetts College offers new scholarship for illegal immigrants. You know what impresses me is how the Indian chiefs running America, meaning the corrupt white politicians, I call them Indian chiefs because they're the same as the Indian chiefs who sold the tribes down the river. Remember, the Indians were noble people willing to fight for their sovereignty, and look what happened to them. And that was primarily not because the warriors were not good. It's because their chiefs were bought out for wampum and for, for whiskey and wampum. And our Indian chiefs are selling us down the river probably for the same things, whiskey and blondes, I would guess. God only knows what they're getting. But the fact of the matter is, how can these Indian chiefs so pander to non-citizens and completely ignore the legitimate citizenry of this country? I will never understand it. Case in point, California. Here we have a demagogue, Jerry Brown, who posed as a centrist, but turns out to be more of a leftist than he was back in the 60s, back in the day. The man is now working overtime with the Hispanic lobby to grant driver's licenses to illegal aliens who were just made into fake citizens by Obama. Obama could be arrested for what he did. Obama had no authority to grant citizenship because he overrode Congress. If we had a Congress with a spine, they would have impeached him for it just before the election. They would have impeached him for overriding our checks and balances. They would have impeached him because he overrode the will of most of the people. Because I know that even Democrats in the state of California are anti-illegal immigrant. Incidentally, it's not because they have anything against Hispanic people. It's because they know that the social services in the state are being sucked dry by the non-citizens who don't even pay taxes. That's why it's commonsensical. So the Indian chiefs like Governor Brown completely ignore the legitimate voter and step over themselves, pandering to the illegal Hispanic voter, as though the legitimate voter doesn't even matter anymore. And the same is true for Romney, incidentally. Yes, it's true for Obama, we know already. That's a given. But Romney is more concerned about the non-citizen Hispanic voter than he is about the Tea Party, who he dismisses and sneers at. I don't know if you know this. I know you don't want to hear any of this, but it's a given I'm going to vote for Romney because it's anyone but the communist. Anyone but the communist machine that's running this country, as the way I see it. I'll take my chances on a corrupt corporate Romney over a communist who wants to take away my birthright. And I'll sleep better at night with Romney in the White House in terms of national security, because something in me tells me that his interests with regard to America and American values are a little closer to mine than are the man from Kenya. I mean, Indonesia. I mean, the citizen of the world in the White House. Let's put it that way.
Savage.
Woody Allen's favorite president, 8% jobless in 2013. I don't 8%. Are you people crazy? Everyone knows it's closer to 16%. Napolitano sued by agents for illegal immigrant policy. Lawsuit accuses Homeland Security of telling agents to ignore duties and not deport some illegal immigrants. Good for them. It's only the country can only be saved if the workers inside these agencies sue the chiefs, the illegitimate chiefs. They're only people. Remember that. Just remember, Napolitano is a very powerful individual, but she's only an individual. And she is subject to the law. And she just might lose the lawsuit. And if Romney wins, she just might go to jail. The same is true for all of the other Indian chiefs who are breaking the laws in the United States of America. And it's the thing that kept people in check in the past, by the way. It's not that they were any better than they are today. People are afraid that one day they may have to answer to a lawsuit and an oversight committee and go to jail. That's all. Not anymore. Tattoo infections linked to Manufacturers, Inc. We won't go into that. I'm not a tattoo person. I'm sure there's very fine people who are tattooed. I'm not one of them. You notice that Harvey Weinstein is now complaining that someone was out to kill him? Did you see that big story? This is a week after he embarrassed himself by calling for a ban on guns after the shoot-up in the movie theater to cover up the fact that it was his movies, probably more than any other factor in America that instills violence in the minds of the deranged and the weak-minded. The madness that Weinstein has produced, the vile pornography and filth that Weinslime has produced, is probably more of a connection between the filth that he puts out in the movies and the violence that's occurring in this country than any other factor. So Weinslime comes out and attacks guns. 2 weeks later now, he says an actor is out to kill him. Well, nobody can support that kind of actor if he actually did it. But how come he gets away with it? Why? Because he supports the president. That's why. Why do I have to read about Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie ever again? Why must I ever see another story about these losers? Why? Why must I ever, ever see another story about them. I can't take it anymore. Why does Murdoch continuously flood our minds with stories about Brad Armpit and Angela Jolie? Why? Yeah, well, why? Because people read it, I guess. They're more interested in that than the NDAA, that's why. Aspiring actor arrested for alleged $4 million extortion plot against Oscar-winning producer Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein and fashion designer wife Georgina Chapman. In an attempt to... Vivek Shah, age 25, was looking to launch a career in film and television and had scored a few bit parts in some bad movies. He allegedly sent threatening letters to Weinstein and four other powerful magnates, including coal magnate Christopher Klein, as well as an oil tycoon and the owner of an NHL team. Weinstein is not named in the affidavit, but instead described as a Connecticut resident and co-founder of a film studio. Shah's Facebook page contained countless photos of him with A-list stars like Tom Cruise, Angela Not Jolie, Ozzy the Junkie Osbourne, and Sophia, whoever she is, Vergara. What's interesting to me about this story is not so much as this idiot sent them threatening letters, which of course should land them in jail for 10 years, but what's interesting to me is that so-called A-listers would let their picture be taken with a nobody like this guy Shah. And so I was thinking about it, how could a guy like this nobody actor get next to these A-listers and get a picture taken with them? And I figured the answer out. Vivek Shah is Vivek Shah. Now, how does Vivek Shah look? He's not an ordinary white man with a muscular arm and a tattoo coming up to Tom Cruise, is he? Why, he's a Middle Easterner, possibly even a Muslim. And so, therefore, all of these PC actors... Oh, yeah, sure, I'll take a picture with you. Sure, put your arm around me. Yeah, I don't want to be seen as a racist. I can't reject you. So every one of these schmucks in Hollywood, this guy comes up to him, can I have a picture with you? So they look at him. Well, I don't know who this schmuck is, but look, he must be a Muslim. I better say yes, or else it could be bad press for me. Right away, the arm goes around the guy, and there's a picture taken with this nobody and the A-lister. It just shows you what sheep they are. It just shows you the people that your children look up to as role models. They're sheeple. They're sheeple, basically. Run by a guy like Weinstein. I don't know Weinstein personally, but I know people who do. And I could tell you some very bad stories about his business dealings. That's all I can say to you. He's not very well liked in the business community of Hollywood. In fact, any more I can't tell you, but there's millions of dollars involved on many, many fronts. But let's put aside his business dealings or his alleged business dealings. The movies that Harvey Weinstein has produced are pornographic and violent. That is correct. Is that true? Yes. Do you suspect that they have influenced the minds in a negative way of many people? If you don't, then there's something wrong with you. I have a little interesting piece to play for you on the lines of NPR. We made it up for you. Listen.
You're listening to NSR, National Savage Radio.
See, now the Harvard professor can call back and probably feel more comfortable. He heard the fancy music, so he can feel a little more fanciful about what I might tell him. You know, it's not the it's the corporations, and if you don't know that, it's the multinationals controlling everything. Oh, a real wizard. He must be a professor of economics, no less, at Harvard. That without his tenured professorship, he couldn't make $100,000 in his lifetime. As an example, let's go to Sean Penn's favorite dictatorship, Venezuela. This article, I just found it a minute ago. Venezuela imports oil despite having the largest reserves in the world. Did you hear this? Sean Penn's hero, Hugo Chavez, the dictator, has so destroyed the petroleum industry in his own nation. Guess who is selling him gasoline and oil? Take a guess. Your government. Do you know that according to the so-called Department of Energy, Venezuela imported 1 million barrels of processed gasoline in December of 2011 from the United States of America? That's right. We are selling crude oil to a dictatorship that stands to destroy us, Venezuela. Can you explain why Obama would be selling oil to Venezuela? Can you explain why Venezuela lacks refinery capacity? Even though it has the largest reserve of crude oil on the planet, estimated at 316,000 millions of barrels, Why is it that Venezuela, which 10 years ago exported gasoline to other countries, including the United States, is now a net importer of gasoline and crude oil? The answer is because communists can't manage anything. All they can do is lie, cheat, and steal. And that's exactly what Obama is doing to this country. That's right. Experts say that the refinery capacity in Venezuela has been dismantled in the last 10 years. And Venezuela has not built a refinery since Obama/Chavez took power, despite promising to build dozens of them. So why would Obama not build new oil refineries in America? Why would Obama have banned drilling in the Gulf of Mexico while permitting foreign entities to drill in the Gulf of Mexico, at the same time supporting corrupt, fake, fraudulent solar companies that will never, ever produce enough capacity for the cities that they are being built around? Why? For the same reasons that I've been trying to tell you. Some of it is disguised as altruism, the desire to provide cleaner, cheaper energy. And in the long run, 50 years from now, 60 years from now, there might be some technological breakthroughs that would permit us to be running on solar energy. That would be wonderful, wouldn't it? I'd love to have a solar generator on the top of my car. I'd love it. I could give up my gasoline engines and my cars and my boats and run it off the sun. I'd love that. But we're maybe a half a century away from that day. So I have nothing against the government funding such research in universities. They should be doing so. They'd be remiss not to. But to give $900 million to a favorite politician's brother-in-law to build a solar factory in the middle of Nevada, which will produce almost no energy, has nothing to do with making us energy independent, does it, boys and girls? Or have you already missed the point? I suppose so, but then it's not my job to say any more than I've already said. In Venezuela, Ray Chavez has apparent money edge. So even in Venezuela, a dictatorship, an outright naked dictatorship, he has a money edge over his opponent. I guess Hollywood has supported him with their money. I guess Sean Penn has gone down there and given of himself quite freely. Unbelievable to me. I, Michael Savage, will be right back.
Savage.
Would you like to talk about Orlando, Florida? Monique, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Savage. I just wanted to let you know that I have been recently listening to your program, and I appreciate you in every aspect. I appreciate your honesty and your truth. And I would like to just add that I am a black woman from the Caribbean. I am not African American. But I am very proud to say that I am a grateful citizen, and I am 75 years old, but I haven't lost all my marbles just yet.
No, of course not. Well, you can look through a fraud when you see him and hear him, and I think what you're saying is pretty clear. We don't have to mention the big O word. We know that there are different people in every race, good, bad, and indifferent, and it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with people. My mother taught me that. It's turned out to be true. It's not about race, it's about character. And we happen to have a character who's very shady in the White House. It's as simple as that. And I thank you for your call and bless you for the listenership. 1-800-449-8255. Let's move on. I've told you about martial law by executive order. It's a shocker that we are now living in martial law, written by a liberal blogger, published on the Huffington Post website back in March. I just picked it up, put it on michaelsavage.com. It scared even me. A new executive order that gives the president absolute power. You say, well, they're not really going to use it. Oh, really? Tell that to the Marine who was just arrested and put into a mental hospital for evaluation without any judicial oversight for posting on his Facebook site some criticisms of the president. You know, this is pretty bad time. These are bad times. So just tell the joke then. Check on the front, check on the back. That'll get the message across, and maybe we can swing that one out of four independents into the Romney camp. Maybe we could embarrass people into doing the right thing. I don't know. Or you want to call me on other topics, you can do it. Yesterday we were talking about sauce versus gravy. We're still debating it. Please, I can't do it for another hour. But we have one caller on the barbecue issue, which I can't resist taking. New York WOR Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, just talking about that whole mafia barbecue kind of thing, or a kind of get-togethers. They really, no such thing would ever take place. I had an uncle who was a soldier in the Genovese family. He's dead, by the way, so I can speak freely about him. And his brother actually was the captain of the crew that they were in, and they actually came up with Murder Incorporated, Albert Anastasia. And it's a mafia book. You can even find their names. Because the nature of the business is just cold. I mean, they just don't get together because they really, there is no brotherhood, and there's always the fear that you're being watched. And so large gatherings.
This is how this started yesterday. On the show, I was joking about a barbecue I was thinking of having for Labor Day. And I said, or mafia movies where they have these great barbecues. And I said, I don't think they really exist. And a guy called and said, no, you're wrong. I was at one in Sacramento. And so you're saying what I suspect is true. There are no such things.
No. And first of all, Mike, there were hardly any wise guys in Sacramento. I could tell you that first.
That got me a belly laugh. That's funny.
I lived in San Francisco, and I was in Sacramento. Believe me, it's not a place where mafia guys would want to live. So, but no, it's the truth. But you know, as you meet these guys and you see the life they live, I mean, you know, this kind of fraternity wouldn't exist in the first place. I mean, your best bet to, I mean, people might find them at social clubs where they'll drink coffee and they'll have various types of, you know, foods or whatever. But as far as like an outing, barbecuing, this stuff virtually doesn't exist because of the nature of their business and the fact that they really aren't close with one another. These are business relationships, nothing more, nothing less. Just, you know, very vicious.
My intuition that there's no such thing, I'm not missing anything, in other words.
No, not at all. And even if something like that took place, they would be eating the same foods anyone else did. Hot dogs, hamburgers, braciole would be on the grill, sausage and peppers. You know, they'd have macaroni salad, potato salad, steaks. I mean, it would be as American as it would be anything Italian. So, but the
All
idea...
All right, so now here's the last word on the sauce versus gravy. What did you call it when you were a kid? What did your mother call it?
Gravy. Gravy. It's not, you don't even think about it until someone who has some sort of cultural refinement says, you mean sauce. And you say, well, yeah, I know technically you're right, but Italians, Neapolitans, Sicilians, I mean, it's just Sunday's gravy day. That's all there is to it. That's
well,
the word
I spoke
they
to my friend who owns a restaurant this morning, and he's an Italian from Italy, but he lives in San Francisco. He said, well, sauce is different than gravy. He said he told me that sauce is basically a cheaper version gravy is a cheaper version of a sauce. It's quick. It's usually cooked with the renderings of the fat from the meat, and it's made quickly. He said cheaper. He actually used the word cheaper. Doesn't mean it doesn't taste better. It does.
Because there's, you know, home cooking of this has all kinds of tricks that, you know, you use old bacon grease and, you know, to get the flavor out. But it's just, you know, you just say gravy. It's like so a matter of fact. You don't
I know. Well, but I know I'm going to get 100 calls now from different Italian views, but... So, Mike, your uncle is gone?
Yeah, he passed away in the early 90s.
So, if he was alive, you wouldn't have made this call?
I probably would have because he would have been a guy not interested in kind of, you know, this stuff wouldn't be here. But I wouldn't have said openly that he was actually a member of the Genovese crime family, and his brother was actually the captain of the crew he was in, who actually came up with Albert Anastasia and Murder Incorporated. And there's a book, I don't remember the name of it, it's about the Pleasant Avenue Tavern, which existed in Harlem, New York, which was the heroin headquarters of America at the time. And his crew was involved in that whole Pleasant Avenue thing, and they spent a lot of time in jail for heroin distribution and drugs and so on. And then eventually left, got into the numbers business, which is where they made most of their money thereafter. But
numbers, let me ask you something. Indian gambling casinos, they pay no taxes. How come? Does anyone have an answer to that?
Nobody.
Yeah, here's a question that keeps every time I hear Obama or the fraudulent Democrats making believe that they're robbing from the rich to give to the poor. They keep saying that the rich should pay their fair share. How come no one ever brings up that Indian gambling casinos should pay their fair share? How come that's unknown, though? Why does no one mention that?
And no one, I think, really even cares. I mean, the government is giving them a sanction because supposedly, like all other groups, they wrote some form of reparation, and this is the way to kind of make up for it. Although Donald Trump has said, and I work for Donald Trump, actually, if you don't mind saying, I have a security guard. I do security work for his company. And he's gone into those casinos up in Connecticut. He says that they don't look like any Indians I've ever seen.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I mean, Indians. I think I'm more Indian than some of them.
I do know that, you know, like...
Well, yes, I'm glad Trump has the guts to say it. Why don't they pay their fair share of taxes? That would help balance the budget, wouldn't it? We never hear anybody mentioning it. But hey, this is a great call. But one thing I'm going to ask you, please, folks, don't call about gravy and don't call about sauce. Please, no more gravy sauce. It's an interesting topic, but we can't do it for 2 days in a row. Fox News poll, Romney pulls into lead. Romney pulls into lead, but it's amongst those people who earn a living. What are you going to do about it? Obama is not winning the senior citizen vote. Apparently, the butterfly ballot folks in Florida have warmed up to Romney. I don't know how that happened. I mean, you think that the butterfly ballot folks in Boca Raton, Fort Lauderdale, in that area, would still love Obama no matter what. But no, the butterfly ballot ladies of Boca are moving towards Romney. In key states such as Florida and Wisconsin, Romney is actually leading Obama. But in the key battleground state of Ohio, which was stolen for Democrats many times in the past, Obama is still leading his Republican rival, Mitt Romney. It's interesting that seniors, though, have moved over to Mitt. I never would have thought that would have happened. How is that possible? Medicare, Medicaid, the environment. I guess it's the Medicare fear that one of the scams of Medicare will... You know, cut back so they can't spend their money in Indian gambling casinos. You know, less money for an Indian, you know, the junkets to the gambling casinos for the seniors is a big perk. You ever see these buses coming out of San Francisco? It's so cynical, it's frightening. We have one up here, Indian casino, Indian this, Indian that. I don't even know where it is near Sacramento. So I see buses on the highway racing up Highway 101. I see billboards in Chinatown that are so cynical, they make me...